everybody, and welcome to our panel on manga for adults. I am going to briefly introduce our panel, part of which is in absentia. My name is Bridget Alberson. I'm the blogger at Manga Blog, and I write for a number of different outlets, and I've been writing about manga for quite a while. We have David Brothers.
Hi, I'm the branding manager for Image Comics, and I read a bunch of manga and have opinions.
There we go.
Noted comic critic, David Brothers.
Yes, exactly. I think that could be said of pretty much everybody on this panel. Peggy Burns of Drawn and Quarterly.
Hi, I'm the publisher of Drawn and Quarterly. I've been with the company for 13 years, and I've been there since we started doing Gekkaiga and Manga.
Great, and Christopher Butcher.
Hi, I'm Christopher Butcher. I'm the festival director. This is my first time at Librarian Educator Day. I'm very excited to be here.
Also a noted commentator on
comics critic
in particular. Yes. Chris has opinions. Calvin Reed from Publishers Weekly may be joining us. His flight from BEA was delayed. And Deb Aoki, who blogs about manga at mangacomicsmanga.com, is not here. She's here in spirit, however. She's the one who put together the PowerPoint deck. And After this presentation, we will post that for your reference at mangacomicsmanga.com. And we will also, Jamie Cavill is here, and he's doing a recording of this panel. So that will also be there. So a little bit of archived content for you. And I'll also have links to some of this information up at mangablog.net, which is my blog. So I wanted to start out, though, by getting a little bit of a feel from you about what exactly is it that you are looking for, and like, why are you looking for manga for readers who have moved up, like, you know, the Naruto reader who's grown up? Are you looking for manga for graphic novel readers? Are you academic libraries? Like, can I get a sense of your interests? Just anybody call out. Yes.
Hi, I'm a librarian who loves manga. I'm looking for ways to not only help teenage readers of manga to move into like more adult stuff, but to find ways of introducing manga to people who like comics but don't read manga.
Okay. All right.
It's a hard line sometimes for people.
Yes. Yes. Anybody else got a thought on what you look over? Yes.
Well, I'm a librarian, but I'm actually just here to personal interest.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like I'm one of those people who likes comics but hasn't made the transition to manga.
I think one of the distinctions that we'll draw in this, and we'll talk about it when we talk about the different titles, is some of these are books that would be actually accessible even to someone who doesn't read graphic novels. Like, some of them are good for first-timers, and then others, if you're not an experienced manga reader, you're going to have a hard time with. So we'll talk a little bit about that, I think. But shall we just go straight to the presentation?
Yeah, we all made suggestions on things that we wanted to cover and individual projects that we wanted to cover in this meeting. And so the best thing I thought the thing to do is to just like go through the slides of the books, and each of us will talk about maybe one of our recommendations. And talking about that, hopefully talk a little bit about collection building, talk a little bit about appropriateness, and, you know, general information. How's
yep.
that?
Yep.
Great. I was a late addition to the panel, so I'm going to wing it, but I think it'll work out.
David wings it better than most of us do when we're prepared, so. We're starting out with a real classic here. Yoshihiro Tatsumi's The Pushman. Who wants to start on this? Peggy, maybe?
Sure, I'm happy to start on this. This was the very first Gekkaiga title we published. And I think what's key about starting with Tatsumi is that when we decided to publish this, two things. Tatsumi, to us, just seemed like a great cartoonist. There was no genre, there was no manga distinction, there was nothing but this guy draws great comics. He could be in any country in the world and we would publish it. And, you know, we published it after manga had already hit big in North America, and we weren't trying to get on the gravy train, we weren't trying to, like, yeah, get on some manga action here. It was just like, this is a great comic. And as such, we made a pretty controversial decision, but I think 13 years later, we came out on the right side of it, is that we decided to publish Tatsumi left to right. And it was, as Chris will remember, people did not like that decision. But I think, you know, after these three volumes and after A Dripping Life, all being published left to right, he sells very, very well. He continues to sell, I think, as adults. You know, I now read right to left, but I can't say that if I did it wasn't in comics, I might not read right to left. And it is, if you're looking for that bridge comic, I think The Pushman or Drifting Life or anything that we've done by Tatsumi is the great book to give somebody, an adult, to say, here's a comic by a Japanese cartoonist that is fantastic.
And just to, the right to left versus left to right, I mean, obviously we all read left to right, and in Japan, comics, most media are published right to left. And kids pick it up right away, just like any language. They pick it up very easily and start reading right away. So you see comics and Japanese manga being adopted by younger readers much more quickly than you do in adult collections. And so some publishers take on themselves to flip it, to make it more approachable, particularly as a work goes for a more adult audience, usually working now with the creators in Japan to make sure that they're okay with the changes.
Right.
He was totally in favor of that.
That was it when we talked to Tatsumi, and we said, we want to publish it left to right. It was immediate. It was like, you know, an email back 2 hours later. Of course, what else would you do? Now, we'll get to another one of our creators later on where, you know, we weren't going to ask that at all. But he has this, Tatsumi, who died last year or the year before, he had a great story of trying to pick up a Superman comic and reading it left to right that had been translated to Japanese, and he just tossed it. You know, he was just like, I can't read left to right. He's like, so I would never expect anyone to read my books right to left.
So you are going to get to building a manga collection for your library, whether it's, you know, an institutional library or even a public library. You are going to get those adults that are just like, I'm not going to read anything that I have to learn a whole new direction to read. That's just where they draw their line. There are works available in manga that have been flipped. Flipped is the sort of industry term for it. And you can find them, and you know, if that's something that you've got to hit, you can hit that with different books. And you know, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor for certain books.
Another interesting thing about Tatsumi that you can connect to your other adult graphic novel collection is that his editor in the North America is Adrian Tomina, who has done Shortcomings and Optic Nerve and Killing and Dying. And Adrian was a fan of Tatsumi, had found bootleg comics of his, and was just like, when he was in his teens, and was couldn't believe that, you know, someone from Japan, and Adrian Tomina is Japanese-American, was doing this work, and he was just so touched, and he went to Japan, and he tracked Tatsumi down, and came to us and said, will you do this work? And we were like, of course. So that's something, like, if someone's been reading Adrian Tomina or Dan Klaus, like, Tatsumi is the perfect person to say, well, you know, Adrian Tomina is his editor, and so it's a great segue.
Contemporary literary fiction and comics, if you've got readers there that are doing the D&Q books, the Fantagraphic books, the Pantheon books, Tatsumi's a great one. To transition them to, you know, becoming more manga readers or picking out, you know, readers.
Are flipped books marked in any way? You know, when you order them for the collection, does it say flip, or is that not
standard? It actually doesn't. Yeah, you kind of have to know that ahead of time, and Amazon or anyone doesn't have that information. That's why it's important to work with a wholesaler that can answer those questions for you.
I think what was interesting about our decision to flip it at the time is that flipping was controversial back then, because there were a number of companies that literally flipped, like they flipped the artwork.
We weren't
flipping the artwork per se. Tatsumi worked with us. We were rearranging the artwork so that it read left to right. It was a much our
Tatsumi
direction.
Actually rearranged it himself.
Yeah, it was a much different thing that we were doing. But still, you know, the purists or semi-purists, because we weren't reading a Japanese.
You'll find that a lot with mangas. There's a lot of people who have very strong opinions that kind of shake out from under them. if you push a little bit.
Don't get into a conversation with them, no. Just
But yeah, I honestly think that Pushman is one of the most important manga that was released in the 2000s, and it sort of changed a lot of contemporary stuff in manga and opened the doors for a lot of stuff, including the festival here. Tatsumi came in 2009, and he was our first Japanese guest, and him coming was sort of open the floodgates, and that's why we have such a good relationship with, you know, many Japanese publishers and Japanese guests every year, the Japan Foundation and the consulate. So yeah, this was a really important book, and one I think that should be in every library. And that's it, it's dark as hell.
Yeah, I was going to say that. One thing to know is that rating mature is spot on, but it is definitely dark.
People find some dark stuff happens.
But his other book, A Drifting Life, is not dark. And A Drifting Life,
that's our second selection, A Drifting Life. And that is his massive autobiography.
And I wouldn't actually call it mature. I would just call it, you know, a biography. It's pretty accessible.
Yeah, it's always difficult with ratings, and this is something that also comes up with building teen versus adult collections, is that some things are maybe safe for teens, but are more appropriate for adult collection due to adult interest. And this is a book that's very firmly there, where there's nothing that's in there that, you know, someone can hold up a page and go, this is inappropriate for a teen readership. But the adult audience is the intended audience. This is a memoir of growing up very poor after the Second World War, of discovering comics and discovering and deciding to be a comics maker. It's an incredible work, and if you have a memoir in your library, you should have this.
Yeah, what's fascinating about the difference between Japanese comic culture and North American comic culture is that we're very self-centered, and we think that we invented the graphic novel, we think we invented comics for adults, and it's totally not true at all. People were doing, Tatsumi was doing work, you know, and it wasn't, I mean, we had the counterculture comics of the 60s and 70s, but it wasn't what Tatsumi was doing. Tatsumi was doing these awesome, fully fleshed out stories, and this is his memoir of starting out in the mainstream Japanese comics, not being fulfilled, and wanting to do Gekiga, which is adult comics for adults, literary comics in Japanese. And it's his story of, you know, becoming the author that he is today, or he was.
So, and it's also worth noting that you guys have AV collections, like DVDs and stuff like that. This volume, as well as Pushman and some of his other short stories, informed the basis for the movie Tatsumi, which is an animated movie that's available now. And it's a great, you know, if you're looking again for anime for adults, which is not adult anime, which has a different connotation, you know, alongside the Studio Ghibli films and alongside the stuff that's already circulating in your collections, the Tatsumi film is definitely one to have.
Yeah, what was wonderful is Chris and I met Tatsumi when he first came to San Diego Comic-Con, and we were his first major foreign publisher that, you know, brought him over to festivals and everything, and they were just floored. They couldn't believe that, you know, Comic-Con treats their special guest SST Cat very well, and they just were just so shocked that they were here in the U.S. And then his star just kept climbing, though, after it. That's what was great. And then, you know, a few years before his death, you saw this picture of him on the red carpet at Cannes, and, you know, my heart just was like, oh, my God, thank goodness that he was able to see before his death, one, the maturation of the graphic novel medium, and that there's this international community of readers. And he always felt like such an outsider in what he was doing. Even up until, you know, the 2000s, he did not feel he was not famous in Japan. He did not feel like he had an audience. And when he came to North America, he really felt at home. He really felt like, you know, he was with his people. So it's a very fascinating story.
I'm going to move this along.
Yeah. I could just talk about Tatsumi all day.
A lot of books. So the next one is Onward Towards Our Noble Deaths by Shigeru Mizuki. Another Drawn in Quarterly title. So, Peggy, you want to?
So on the flip side, where Tatsumi, it's a good way to end Tatsumi, where he was not famous in Japan, Mizuki is totally famous in Japan. He's the kind of cartoonist that if you meet someone from Japan, you go, oh yeah, I published Shigeru Mizuki. And they're like, anybody, they're like, what? You published Shigeru Mizuki? Mostly because his wife was on a TV show that was, you know, aired constantly in the country. But he's honestly got famous. There's streets named after him. He's a very well-known cartoonist. His style is that he does realistic with cartoony style, and he's the one cartoonist that I alluded to earlier who would not let us publish left to right. He would only let us publish in right to left, and of course, if that's your wish, we're not going to make you do that.
The work specifically, this one, Our Souls Towards Our Noble Death, was the first, did this come out before Non Non Bai?
Yes,
the first
it did.
It's the first one in English, and you have to understand, Mizuki's someone who has more than 100 volumes of books, like a 200 to 400 pages each in Japan, and we had just gotten the very first volume of his stuff, I guess maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe?
Well, he's very, you know, because he is well known, he is very famous, he's just very controlled of his foreign rights and everything.
Yeah.
He's not going to let it out to somebody that he doesn't trust. And so through a series of relationships of, you know, publishing Tatsumi, and, you know, doing that with respect and having a publisher in Japan speak highly of us, we were able to get this deal. And why we started with this book in particular, because he's known for a whole different genre of comics, but why we started with this book is because it ties in with his personal story in that he was in World War II and fighting for Japan, and he lost an arm and went on to become a cartoonist. And so this is his story of that, and that's why we started with this book, because, you know, that's...
Yeah, it's an amazing, it's a really powerful story, because it's something that you don't see too much. A story of World War II told from the point of view of someone who was in the Japanese Army and who actually, you know, can I spoil the story? Was told, you know, like his battalion was attacked, it was reported they had died, and they didn't. So they were basically told, go out again, do another charge, and don't come back.
Right.
Yes. You know?
That's literally onward
towards your own. It's the flip side of the suicide edict. Like, you know, like, you know, we've always learned about it from the North American, from the Allied point of view. But, you know, then you read this whole story. Yeah, what the heck was it like to be a soldier with that hanging over your head?
Yeah.
Short answer, not cool.
Yeah.
No, it's memoir. It's war fiction, which is huge. We opened page and panel downstairs. Is the next slide Showa?
Let me put up Showa. Yes.
So we opened page and panel downstairs and last year, and one of our best sellers was actually the Mizuki Showa series, as well as Onowara's Towards Our Noble Death. And we hadn't expected to sell a lot of manga, let alone a lot of flip manga, let alone to people let alone people in their 60s and 70s. So people that like to read about the war love reading these books, because Onowara's Towards Our Noble Death is a memoir. It's his life story. Whereas Showa is the entire history of Japan all the way through the First and Second Wars, and then the rebuilding afterwards. It's a really big deal. And people were floored by this, that this Japanese pacifist perspective on the war was published and available in English and in comics as well. That blew their minds. And it was actually one of our best sellers for like the first 6 months that the store was open, because everyone sort of realized. And now, like, we're scrambling to find EC war reprints and things like that just to save that audience. Like, the war, and if you have collections, if you have an older, you know, clientele that is looking for something interesting, these are interesting books.
You know what's interesting about the Showa series is that it does very well for us as a publisher. And I'm going to forget, but my husband is my comic book fact checker for me, who knows all the comics. Fantagraphics has the war comic. It's the Green Book Moglin, or...
Bill Malden.
And, you know, I keep track of what books sell for other publishers. I always see that book on the book scan charts. And I had no interest in reading it, but I gave it to my dad, who was in the Marines, and he loved it. And then when we had Showa and it took off and it was, like, getting reviewed in, you know, like, military magazines, I was like, oh, this is it. We're tapping into this audience.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that's a great thing to know about for collection building, is that you're looking to not just serve, obviously as librarians, you want to serve the widest number of people with books in your library and have the graphic novel collection not just be read by 13 to 18 year olds, you know, young men and women. This is the kind of book that really broadens that.
Moving on to something completely different. We have Takehiko Inoue's Vagabond. David, what do you think about
Vagabond? So this is my favorite comic and the best self-help book you'll probably ever read. Like the summary says, it's the story of Miyamoto Musashi, but it begins before he was the greatest swordsman of all time, and he was just a young knucklehead who was going around cutting people up with swords and stuff. And it's the story of his maturation as both a swordsman and also as a man. He learns that invincibility is a myth. Like, no one is truly invincible, no matter how bad you are, someone else can beat you. So then aiming for invincibility as a goal is a fallacy. You have to find something more concrete to aim for. And I call it a self-help book because it's about him growing up. It's also kind of about working in the arts. If you switch the sword for a paintbrush, most of the lessons still apply. You'll never be the greatest painter. You can only be the best painter that you could possibly be. And he goes through a lot. I mean, there's one volume of this. The 3-in-1 format's really interesting because they combine 3 editions into one omnibus. So it's about 600 pages of comics. And I think volume 7 is a 550-page fight scene where he's fighting 70 people.
May I ask if interject? So
yeah.
You have 12 volumes. The thing about Showa is that you don't have to start at the beginning of the Showa era. You can read each of the books.
This is completely serialized.
Yeah,
so you can't pick up, you have to start from volume 1?
I think there are jumping on points where his story kind of resets after he suffers like a debilitating setback. He has to kind of rebuild himself from that. But the impact, it's very much like if you go from 1 to 36 or 37, it's much more powerful. But I think for a collection building, you would definitely want the omnibus volumes, because there are fewer of them, and it's like a harder impact, just getting like, you know, 600 pages at once.
Actually, doing library sales, this is something we encounter all the time. Some people want to have more physical objects on the shelf to take out. So they want the they don't want the 3-in-1 omnibus volumes. They want 3 individual volumes, because then they get higher circulation numbers. Some people want the omnibuses because they're 10 bucks cheaper than buying the 3 books separately. So you get to decide, because all of it's in print right now, what makes your budgetary needs. What do you want to get them separately, or what do you want to get them in omnibus format? But either way, this is the best samurai comic that's out there. The other one that's big is Lone Wolf and Cub, and that one was done in the 70s. It's got kind of a grindhouse, it's lots of sex and violence, some inappropriate content that makes it really difficult, whereas Vagabond is much more a continuous story that any sort of content issues you might have, even in an adult collection, are really very well contained within the story, I guess is the best. Like, there's a lot of context for anything that might happen in the story, whereas Lone Wolf and Cub stuff happens to happen. So it's always a difficult one for people that want to have like those samurai movies, but then all of a sudden when it's not just one scene flashing by in film, but it's a page that someone can linger over, it becomes a content issue, and I think Vagabond's a great choice for that. Also, the art is literally one of the prettiest books that exists in English. Like, it's incredible.
He draws in a variety of styles, too.
Here's the other. I should have Deb's bell here, though, because there's so much good stuff here. Real is in a very different style. You want to talk about Real?
Real is about wheelchair basketball. It's another really good self-help book. Essentially, if you like stories about people overcoming and also having fun with what they're doing, kind of finding their passion while they work, Real is definitely one of those. This guy on the cover here, he was in a car accident. He went from being a star basketball player to a pariah at school to being in rehab, and suddenly he can't perform like he used to, and it's really upsetting. So it's partially about him learning to play basketball in a wheelchair, and it's about the people in the rehab center kind of giving him an example to follow. There's like a wrestler in there, there's a guy who's just like a computer programmer, and they're all at different stages of recovery. And it's uplifting, and you would definitely cry. And I think Vagabond and Real have similar audiences in that if you like stories that are very competitive, but kind of take in the thinking man's approach to competition instead of just like, let's play basketball, that's it, then these are the kind of stories for you.
And that's really the difference between comics for kids and comics for adults, is that the comics are meant for adults. It's adults approaching problems in adult ways. And that's, again, an adult interest versus a teen interest situation.
Real versus Slam Dunk.
Yeah.
Well, I think it also speaks to adding diversity to your collection, in that I can't think of too many North American books that are about disability and sports. I mean,
great features, you know, exactly. Or sports. So.
I mean, there's El Defo, of course.
Yeah.
But that's a younger reader, so.
That's one of the things too that manga brings, is that there's such a diversity of genre and then non-genre stuff as well, like contemporary literary fiction, that if you're looking for more sports comics, if you're looking for more things with girl protagonists, if you're looking for whatever you're looking for, chances are it's already been published in Japan, and the trick is hoping it's been also been published in English.
That's a good segue to Bride's Story.
Do you want to do Bride's Story? I've never read this one.
It's all you.
Bridget,
I adore A Bride Story. So A Bride Story is a very classic, you know, like you want to think, well, Henry James could have written this, right? It's about an English gentleman and a maid. So it's the maid and the son of the rich family, and they fall in love in Victorian England. But there are a couple things about it. First of all, it's a manga, so things happen a little differently. And it's a seinen manga, which means that the intended audience is not Harlequin romance readers. It is written for young men. And I think the tell in A Bride Story, aside from a couple of really luscious nude scenes, is that there's so much attention paid to, like, men's haberdashery. Like, there's, you know, like, the stuff on the guy's desk and the cufflinks and everything like that. Kaoru Mori is a bit of a fangirl, and she started kind of as a fangirl in Victorian England. So she works, it's a very rich story because she works so much in the culture of the time. They go to the opera, they go to the exhibition, you know, I forget the name of it now, but with the big glass house. And so there's a lot of sort of period color to it. At the same time, she's a fantastic draftsman, and the way she composes her pages, just even with the blacks and whites, is really a joy to read artistically. The story is honestly a little bit naive, and there's some weird aspects to it, like the Indian prince who arrives with his entire retinue, including elephants, and they just stay in the region. And then later on, there's a kidnapping, and you're like, what, really? But, so it's a little crazy. It is not your typical Victorian Man and the Maid romance, but it is a really good read, and it is a romance. It's a romance for men in their 20s.
And it's enormously popular once people twig to it, like once people figure out what's going on with it, they just...
It was originally published probably 10 years ago by CMX, which no longer exists. It was DC's manga imprint. But Yen Press has brought it out in beautiful hardback, sort of larger format, double-sized volumes. So I believe it's complete in 4 volumes now.
Yeah, that's the thing I found with collections is that if you bought M1 to 3 when it was a CMX volume, and then they never finished it. So that's available now in a new omnibus. You might have to rebuy it, but we wouldn't recommend it if you shouldn't.
Absolutely. So another Kaoru Mori story is A Bride's Story. This is her now being a fangirl of the Silk Road in Central Asia. And it starts with a story that I think is a little odd. It's a 12-year-old boy marrying a 20-year-old woman. She comes from another tribe. But it's very, it's a good story. And it kind of, there's a lot of action to it, actually. She hunts rabbits and stuff like that. It again, is an opportunity to look at another culture, in this case, the culture of Central Asia in the 19th century. And then, so the first few volumes focus on that. And there's an English researcher who's staying with them. So then the next few volumes follow him. And volume 7, I think, should have been subtitled Breasts, Breasts, Breasts. Have you read that one, David?
I've seen the beginning of this. I've read volume 7.
So, because it's all like a self-contained tale about a woman who makes friends with another woman at the public baths. Mm-hmm. So it is the most boobalicious manga I've ever read, I have to say. But she is a fantastic draftsman. Do you have things to say?
Yeah, the way a friend sold me on this was she said that if you want to read a comic about people just living and kind of experiencing their culture almost by osmosis, like this is the one. Because there are just so many pages where it's like someone goes on a picnic and like everything is rendered on
it's slice of
the
life.
Blanket.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Super slice of life.
I'm carving a door for 3 pages, but it'll be a really good 3 pages.
Yeah. Manga can make anything interesting, is the other thing. So if you see something that's like, really, they did a manga about what bar you should go to drink a specific kind of sake, it's going to be fantastic.
Right, and I think Hikaru no Go is the ultimate example of that. It's a manga about a board game. It's an action manga about a board game that goes on for like 24 volumes.
Just going to add, that's not just an action manga about a board game, it also involves ghosts.
Yeah,
that's a nice way to interesting.
Speaking of action manga, who wants to talk about Vinland Saga?
This is incredibly violent in a really entertaining way. It's like hardcore Viking drama. It's really well researched. I assume like all the costuming looks really period appropriate. This story is another one. It stars a young guy whose father was killed by a bandit. So he joins the bandit's group to eventually one day duel and kill his captain. Get revenge for
longer reasoning for you.
He's like 8 when he decides it, so it's very bad man. But along the way, because he's always fighting this guy who is like 5 feet taller than him and, you know, a hulking Viking dude, he becomes an incredible fighter on his own, so he's a real asset to the group. So he's kind of the guy they send in first to take out the really tough people, and then the rest of the guys come in to pillage. But then at chapter 50, it's called the end of the epilogue. That's what that title is. That's what that chapter is called. And then the other story starts, which is like what happens when you don't get your revenge and you're forced to live life another way when you've only known one way of life. There are 7 volumes. They're those fat hardcovers.
Yeah, they're double volumes.
Double size.
Yeah.
And they just announced that it's actually going to continue as well.
Oh, thank goodness.
One of the things that's the worst about collecting manga series that aren't either done in one or already completed is that sometimes the series doesn't do well enough to continue and you don't get all the volumes in English. This was one that we thought was a slam dunk, but was experiencing some sales problems. So they took about a year and a half hiatus on that one, but they are going to continue the story to its completion, which we're really excited about.
And the thing about Vinland Saga is you think of It is very violent. Someone gets an arrow to the eyeball about every 100 pages or so. Like, that's definitely a recurring motif. But at the same time, it has an incredible amount of heart. It has the father who dies. He's like almost like a, I don't know how to describe it, but he's the kind of hero that I really like to read about. Let me put it that way. He's like super hot, but also like very wise and gentle, and you know, like does all the right things. Then they kill him. And there are subplots and intrigue, and there's a whole lot more to this than people bashing each other with battle axes. There is bashing with battle axes, yes. But it is a really, really smart manga with a lot to offer almost any kind of reader. There's so much to it. It's a very rich story.
Absolutely. There's a point where the father says that no man has enemies, and that if you were a true warrior, you don't need to use a sword or fight anybody. And his son does not get it. The son's like, well, warriors use swords and kill people. Of course I have enemies.
Right.
But then if you look at the father's example, you understand that what he's saying is that, like, a life of peace is the only way to survive in any world. Like, you need your family, your loved ones, and your friends.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very mature.
And he proves his point by, like, defeating a whole bunch of people without killing any of them in this really epic battle. Like, at the end, they're like, wait a minute, none of us died. How'd that happen? You know? Plus, he's easy on the eyes. I'm just saying. Another one by Makoto Yukimura. And again, this is a manga that was published easily 10 years ago by Tokyopop. They didn't finish it.
Did they? But it went out of print. They almost didn't print the last volume.
Yeah. Then they split it into two, I think. It was very confusing. And then Dark Horse brought it back in a very nice omnibus edition, so it's two volumes instead of four, oversized. It really feels like a book, you know, and it's a great story.
One of the very few examples of literary science fiction that are actually available through manga, if you have like Arthur C. Clarke, classic science fiction fans, this is about a team of people that are basically garbage men in space. There's so much space debris and satellites and things like that they go up and they pull stuff out of orbit so that things don't basically, you know, cycle the Earth at, you know, 1,000 kilometers an hour and just poke holes through space stations and things like that. So it's a really interesting, very slow, like, not really genre piece. It's slice of life. It's literary fiction, but it's set in the future and it has a sci-fi thing. It's the favorite manga of a lot of people who don't read manga. This is one of the ones that,
yeah,
if you want to put something in your collection that's going to really change how people look at mangas in general, this is a great one.
Yes. Opus, on the other hand, is a manga for people who read manga.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely not a beginner story. Satoshi Kon is best known as an anime director of things like Paprika. But he, before he did anime, he did manga, and all his manga is brilliant in different ways. And Opus is kind of a manga about a manga. It's about a manga creator who falls into his own creation. What do you guys think of it? Has everybody read it?
Is this the one that
we discussed
didn't
it, right?
Finish?
Huh?
Was this the one that didn't finish, or was that Seraphim?
That was Seraphim.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think this would be a good one to recommend. I haven't read it, but I've read all of his other ones. I just haven't read Opus yet. But yeah, if you've got manga fans and you're looking for something to age them up into the next sort of level of stuff so that they're not reading Naruto when they're in their 30s, not that there's anything wrong with that. I read it all.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, if they want to have a diversity of tastes and you want to have something you can say, hey, you like manga, this is a book you should check out if it's about manga. And this is a good one.
Yeah. It is a very challenging read. It is like the kind of thing that's just, it's not an easy read, but it's a rewarding read. And somebody else is going to have to talk about Ghost in the Shell, because believe it or not, I've never read it.
Chris looks unsure.
This is a tough one for collections, because everyone's going to want to read it, but the content issues in it are really content issue-y.
Because it's rated older teens.
They chopped out, this edition chops out 5 pages
of
the original edition. You may have the original edition in your collection if you've had it for a long time. Ghost in the Shell is going to be adapted into a controversial feature film. It is going to be really in demand in your libraries, but there's a lot of really superfluous sex, like superfluous sexiness, like almost like a TNA superhero comic, but in this manga. But it was also really smart, too.
But I guess my question for all of you would be, the panel is for manga for adults.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in a lot of our tatsumi, there's sex.
Yeah, but it's so bleak.
It's unhappy sex, so that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, is it just because you're pointing it out because it could easily end up in the teen section and you want to ensure that it is definitely over in the adult section?
Yeah, like I've been straight up conjugated as wrong. This is a mature and conjugated as an older teen. And it's going to have a ton of teen interest. And that's, you know, we don't like to make recommendations. Big Island Library Services, who's putting on their event, doesn't like to make like one-size-fits-all recommendations. They like to build collections of people based on individual issues in their communities. So we have a lot of communities where it's like, violence is okay, but sex is not okay because some of the students and parents and things like that. And that's why we mention things like sex in books. Some of the communities we have, it's like, look, we just need kids to get read. I don't care how sexy it is, but if there's a gun in it, it can't enter the library. Real problems with gun violence. And it's like, oh, okay, and then we just sort of shift over to these recommendations. But yeah, one-size-fits-all recommendations don't work. I think publisher ratings on books are hit and miss, I think isn't the nicest way to put it, since there's a publisher on this stage right now.
You got to read the books, and you got to read the reviews. I mean, that's how I started. That's how I started Manga Blog, was because my kids were reading manga, and I was like, what is this stuff? And I quickly learned that the ratings were not particularly informative, and you know, as you know, sometimes there's not a single boob in the whole book, but the whole theme is, you know,
sexy times.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, at Toronto Quarterly, we have a bookstore in Montreal, and we just started a library services program. And all I hear from you guys in Quebec is that you don't have time to read the books.
Yeah.
You don't have time to read the books. And you don't have time to read the blog. So, and I guess if you're here in Ontario, I would really utilize the services of the Big Island Bookstore, because you're really depending on a knowledgeable retailer. And that's kind of the difference of buying your books for your library from a chain or a major store that won't give you that personalized service. I mean, that's how we're doing it in Quebec, is we're trying to differentiate ourselves from the people who've been doing the library sales for a long time, that we understand the comics, we've read them, we've sold them, we've already heard the complaints. So, you know, we're not going to missell you a book.
Yeah. You know, I want to add something interesting, though, because as I was prepping for this panel, one of the things I did, and in the various blogs I write for, I cover a lot of library challenges, and I was thinking, I don't think there's ever been a library challenge to an adult manga. And a quick Google search proved me right. Who knows? But there's certainly nothing that I'd like. The challenges are almost always to teen manga. I think the expectations are different. And it is true. Like, you know, if you have people who are reading 50 Shades of Grey, I mean, you know, the visual element does add something to it. There's no doubt about it. But I would hope that the expectations would be different for adult books. The only case that I've run across is Paul Prevett's 60 Years of Manga with the Bondage Fairies. The infamous Bondage Fairies, which became a bit of a...
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, and we're not recommending anything today that's like out and out. Like the sex that's in the Tetsumi books or the sex that's in some of the other books is like, you know, what you would find in contemporary adult fiction or even on TV after 9 o'clock. It's not, you know, pornography or anything like that. Not that that doesn't have its time and place in your library collection. Although maybe if the Massive book is here, maybe that one.
Yeah. Okay, so we need to move along a little bit, actually, because we have great books here. So I'm just going to put in my two cents on Pluto. I think Pluto is, I think, my favorite series of all time. Mm-hmm. And it's Naoki Urasawa has a very clear style, so it's a very accessible book for people who are not big-time manga readers, who are turned off by the stylization. It does read right to left, but he has a very clear and very expressive style. His characters are wonderful. And it's a book that can be read on two levels, because it's basically about a big robot battle, and it's about the place of robots in society, and there's even like a little Easter egg where Rosie, the maid from the Jetsons, shows up as a character in it. But it is also based on Volume 3 of Astro Boy, and if you read Volume 3 of Astro Boy, it takes on a whole different significance. So it's a fantastic read, and it's only 7 volumes long, which is not too bad.
It's a sci-fi police procedural.
Oh, there you go.
Which is just like exactly what contemporary readers, that like contemporary TV kind of thing, but real heart, and there's a lot going on that's underneath the surface in this one. We really strongly recommend this, Pluto. We love it.
It's like a really smart robot Law and Order, almost.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's a good one, yeah. Occasionally, yeah. Actually, that's perfect.
Yes.
Next.
Next is This is a new book. Have you guys read it? Who's read it besides
I've
me?
I've read it.
Yeah, what do you think, David?
I kind of had mixed feelings, but I see why it's such a huge hit. It's essentially about a comic. So, like, the first half is about a manga artist talking about manga.
Yeah, and he's, like, super neurotic. Yeah. And that's awesome.
And then there's a zombie breakout, and then it's him trying to find, like, the girl he loves, like, the people he works with. And it's very gruesome and gross and very, I guess, venal is probably the best word.
Yeah.
But it's also very crowd-pleasing in that same kind of sense. It's very, like, a mainstream pop comic. Like, if you like trashy things, I'm a Hero is the one. Because it's about a nerd who gets to try to be a hero. Because he decides that he's a hero, not because he actually does anything heroic.
Yeah, but it is kind of a slow burn, and it is true. Like, this is a two-volume omnibus. Basically, the first volume of the original series is this guy freaking out about everything.
Yeah.
And, like, he has hallucinations, so at first you can't even tell, like, what's real and what's not. And he and his girlfriend had this ridiculous fight, and you're like, oh, my God. You know? And then all of a sudden, like, right at the end, the zombies show up, and the story changes. So it's also, there's a certain type of reader who really, it's like Bakuman.
Yeah.
With zombies, almost. Bakuman with zombies and craziness. Like, if you like that sort of, like, insider look at what manga production is like, there's a lot of that. There are a lot of scenes of, like, the artists all sitting around in the studio working on stuff, you know, pulling all-nighters to make their deadlines. And then the zombies
really
show.
Well drawn, too, is, I think, a point that it is.
It is. Chris, have you read it?
I haven't. It's actually my friend's favorite manga. And I'm excited about it. It just came out a couple weeks ago. But if you have a Walking Dead in your collection, this would be a good recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Children of the Sea?
This is my favorite. Can I do this one?
Yeah.
So straight up, Daisuke Igarashi is just an absolutely incredible author. This is, again, one that's more in the contemporary literary fiction mold as opposed to genre, although there's just so much weird stuff going on that you're never quite, you never get your sea legs. There's a lot going on in this manga. There's a lot under the surface. There's a lot of unanswered questions. Even after it ends, it's five volumes. It's the kind of thing that looks just enough like sort of popular mainstream manga for teens that an adult audience or teens that have grown up might give it a shot that might not otherwise. But it's, and the whole Viz signature line actually does sort of straddle that line of like action adventure stuff that's really popular with more mature, smarter stuff. And this one is just beautiful. It's one of my favorite manga that's come in the last few years, five volumes. I can't really tell you what it's about without giving it away, but it's basically some stuff happens and you're never quite sure if you're going crazy.
It involves sea creatures.
Yes. Sure.
So actually, my pitch for this is that it's fish fan fiction because there are so many, like, it's clear that Igarashi loves the ocean and drawing, like, every barnacle on a whale. You can even kind of see it from the cover. So if, like, you have, like, a strong aquarium in your town, I mean, like, go for that, you know, cross-audience thing.
Hey, guys. This is Calvin. He was supposed to be on the panel.
From Chicago.
I'm too embarrassed to sit through a book.
But
hi.
Thank you for coming.
Yes, well, I'm glad to be here.
We're going real slow. But yeah, do you want
to let's move on to the next
hour
one. Yeah. Okay, so Solanin by Inio Asano. And we get Deb picked, and Inio Asano is an author that you will see a lot of. A number of his manga have come out lately, and they're actually kind of all different from one another. Solanin is a story about 20-somethings in Tokyo.
Yeah, it's about this girl's quarter-life crisis. I read it during my quarter-life crisis, and it was the most profound thing I'd ever read in my entire life.
It is, there are no fantastic elements to that one, so if you get people who think manga is all superheroes or sci-fi or robots or anything like that, and you just want to get them to read a really good story, that's what it's like to be an aimless 20-year-old, that's the book for you.
She just quits her job and joins a band, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I read What a Wonderful World, which had, I think, some overlap with it, and so I'm 55, so I was like, I have these whiny 20-year-olds, I'm over it already. Now, Nishigahara Holograph, on the other hand, is a very challenging horror murder story. It's one of those books where you almost have to read it a couple times before you realize what's going on. It has like a spiraling story structure.
It's 100 Years of Solitude in manga form. Very cool. To me. Yeah. It's very Marquez. Yeah. It's part horror, part like social anxiety, that kind of horror. It's
There's
about
a lot of social anxiety in his work.
Yeah, very much so. But a tragedy happens in a town, and then it flashes forward between like the time the tragedy happens when the cats were children in middle school, and then also when they were adults, and kind of the after effects. And then maybe it all takes place at the same time. There's a lot of magical realism in there.
That's the holograph thing. And then there's all these flocks of butterflies.
It was my favorite manga of the year. It came out 2014 or 2015.
And actually, Asano gets three titles because he's that awesome. Goodnight Punpun has just come out. This is, again, completely different. This is more of a family story about a really unhappy, dysfunctional family. And the little ghost character that you see there is Punpun, and I believe this is kind of semi-autobiographical, right? And the members of the family are all drawn as these almost little schematic features, figures, and then many of the other characters are more realistically drawn. So again, it's a very kind of a literary sort of a manga.
It's really unsettling. It's the first manga in a little while where I've actually had to put it down after every chapter and be
There's like domestic violence in it.
It's not played for laughs, but at the same time, there's like an unbeatable lightness to the story that's just propelling you forward. There's maybe nothing else like this, which is the other nice reason to put It's All Manga in your collection. There's just people coming from a different cultural context that are making work that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, and we're lucky to try and get it translated into English. That's one of the great things about getting works in translation in general. And this is one that we were just discussing this. There's just like some heavy stuff in here, but it's so light that you have to think about it. And so we had to put it in the bulk collection, in the teen collection.
I sort of find sometimes with reading the manga and the Kakaiga is that you kind of realize how entrenched we are in the Western world and our storytelling. Like, you know, even in France, you'll go and, you know, and they're very into genre comics, but it's still very set. We're both very set in our ways. And the diversity in Japan is just amazing.
And I think the lightness and unsettlingness comes from the fact that it's through the point of view of like a middle schooler. Little bird guy. So there's this whole awkward consciousness thing.
And then there's Genshiken.
I'll leap in and say a few things because I absolutely love Genshiken. Well, I mean, for me, it was
Justin from Chicago, ladies and gentlemen.
And boy, are my arms tired. But I love this series, and I also love there's a sequel series to it, the Genshiken second season, that is really fascinating. But if you want to sort of get a handle on otaku culture, if you want to really kind of get a sense of what it's like. If you've ever wondered what Comic Cat was really like to be there, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, it's a naturalistic manga, as you can see with the illustration, but it has all of the manga attributes as well. And what this is about an excuse for all these otaku to go and basically wallow in the stuff that they love, from video games to manga to anime to cosplay, to all of it, but this, from what I can see, is a part of Japanese college life. There are these culture clubs of all kinds. They get together, they do projects throughout the year. They set up Genshiken, which is the study of visual culture, which is a kind of a big baggy way to say everything that we're obsessed with about pop culture is here. But one of the really interesting things about Genshiken, and it shows up a little in this because of one of the characters, the fluidity of gender identity, and it's really explored in Genshiken's second season, where you really see, in many ways, the base that we see going on. And I understand Japanese culture is much more conservative in many ways, in this in some ways, but I found that this series is incredible for exploring how one of the characters in particular deals with his sense of gender. In the sense, unless he's cosplaying as a girl, he can't really draw manga. But when he does, when he is in his identity, he's really good. There is another lesbian character. They're suspicious of each other. It's just amazing. It's beautifully illustrated. It's fun. But there are really some really edgy issues about identity. that come out in this series and are really explored in real detail in Gitchkin's second season. And there's an anime as well. It's really, I just love this. That's why I jumped in, because I love this series so much.
I really, I've only read the first half of the Gitchkin series, but I really like it because it's, it shows that when you get out of high school, you can actually join clubs and university and college that cater to your tastes, as opposed to just sort of being thrown in with all these other people who might not have the same, you know, interests as you. And it's these sort of misfit characters that aren't friends before university starts that join this club, the Gitchkin Club, for anime and manga and video games and toys and all that kind of stuff. And negotiating friendships is a big part of that, because they don't all have the same interests. And so it's like, I'll give you a little bit of this and I'll give you a little bit of that. And it's people who maybe aren't the best socialized. Learning how to have friends is a big part of Gitchkin, and learning how to, like, just not hate other people in the world. And I think that that's something that a lot of people, you know, take from that, is like learning to negotiate friendships, let alone learning to discover your own, you know, identity issues or identity situations.
Next, Tenkan Kikri by Taiyo Matsumoto.
2013 GCAP Festival goes to Taiyo Matsumoto. You did a poster for us, it's lovely. Real quick, Tekken Kinkreed is probably my favorite manga of all time. It came at exactly the right time in my life for me to read it. It is about rebelling against entrenched systems and how that is important. And it is also important to know when the system is so entrenched that you need to leave it. I really recommend this book. It's all one big graphic novel, so you don't have to worry about many series. And it's the kind of thing that doesn't look like how other manga are drawn. So it's a really good one to recommend to people who maybe don't like an air quotes manga style. It doesn't look like that. It looks like American sort of underground independent comics. And he also did the next one that was published.
Thinking Ahead.
Was Sunny, which is coming out right now, and that's a complete change of pace. This is drawn in a very naturalistic style. It's a memoir about his time growing up in an orphanage in Japan. He doesn't identify himself as the lead character until I think the very last volume, but it's very sad, it's very realistic and real, and he softens it quite a bit so that, you know, if your teen readers do get a hold of it, there's no real problems, like it was, you know, in Japan. But at the same time, if you want a really gripping adult memoir that has, like, real depth, people are going to really be crying over this one. Sunny's an amazing, amazing work, and it's just about to finish in English. 6 volumes coming out, I think, next month. Yeah. So, if you want a great memoir in your library that deals with things like orphanage and adoption issues, this is a great one.
This book does really well in our bookstore. Our bookstore has a kids section and it has an adult section, but we don't have the space to really have a teen section, so most of our manga's for adults, and this series does really well, and every single cover is just as gorgeous as this one you see on the screen, and it really grabs people's attention.
It's really flat out a YA book, isn't it?
It runs in an adult magazine in Japan, but he wants to keep it appropriate for teens.
I feel like I've read the 3 volumes, and I don't remember anything that...
Yeah, it's not a content issue. It's more like he feels really strongly that it's like him looking back as an adult. There's a real nostalgia factor. This is the thing when you're writing books about your sort of past life, is you're always writing them as a grown-up, and some people can really get into the heads of kids. So, yeah, this is like, he doesn't want a kid who's in an orphanage to not be able to pick this up and read it, but at the same time, like, I think, yeah, it could go YA. I'm curious, do you guys put it at YA or do you put it at adult?
We do offer it to high school because in some of our public libraries that we work with. But it's something that we would put in front of a high school for fifth grade.
Sure. I always think of it as an adult. Just because it's, you know, it's heartbreaking. So heartbreaking.
It's very sad. Not Simple.
Also, TCAF 2011 feature guest. Not Simple is about a young man with HIV who is involved in some real shady stuff, and it ends up not working out for him, is what it basically comes down to. It is a dark novel, but it is a dark novel that really appeals to people that like to read dark novels or that aren't in a good place themselves, because it talks through a lot of issues around those situations. It's a good book. It's worth having.
Yeah, completed one volume. Again, not sort of the manga style. It's very accessible, I think, to non-manga readers.
For sure.
This is a real tough one because it is currently on hiatus and it doesn't have an ending because the author is very sick in Japan. But is about two girls that have the same name that are sort of polar opposites. It's a great series. It started off as a teen series, and then the author took it in a real direction. We had to pull all the copies out of the teen collections that we put them in and put them in adult collections. It gets really sexy. It is a what's called a Jose manga. It started off as Shoujo, which is a manga intended for an older woman or an older female audience.
Women in their 20s.
Women in their 20s, but yeah, it's really good. Friendship, love, life, it's fantastic.
You know, I had only read the early volumes of it, and I was hooked into it. So, I mean, only like the first, you know, five or six volumes, so I read, but I agree. I'm not really a big shoujo fan, but the personalities, they're moving to the city, it really grabs you, and yeah.
What's the trigger volume for Nana? What's the one where it flips over?
Oh, it was before my time when it had already tricked it. I think it's
13 or 14, something like that. Yeah, so if you've got it, it's okay in your library up until then, and then afterwards it has to really go to an adult collection because it deals with some really serious adult issues, rape, pregnancy scares, like it becomes a book for people in their 20s.
Helter Skelter, Fashion Unfriendly. This is fantastic. It is absolutely tears the fashion industry, not even fashion modeling, apart.
The beauty industry
and notions of beauty. And it is drawn in a kind, it was actually ran in a fashion magazine, I believe, not a manga magazine. And it's completed one volume. It's drawn in this scribbly, almost sketchy style. The only thing that's difficult about it is sometimes it's hard to tell the characters apart. It is about a model who has to modify her body in various ways in order to keep this idealized beauty of hers. And the doctors that are doing it, there's like a plot where there's a detective who is kind of like looking into the doctors who are doing this because ultimately it destroys your body. It makes you beautiful and then you just fall apart. And there's an incredible amount crammed into the single volume. There's a ton of explicit and sometimes distasteful sex. This woman manipulates everybody around her, including her assistant, whom she's horrible to. But it is a fast read, I think just because you get pushed through the book so much, like I was just turning the pages, and it is scathing.
Relentless,
and a lot of fun.
Relentless social commentary.
Relentless,
too.
But so you guys read it too. Penny, have you read it?
I love it. Did you guys read this one?
I haven't read it, but what I find interesting is that this is our first book published by Vertical in the presentation. And Vertical, for me, is like the penultimate publisher of Japanese comics. They were the ones that we modeled our program and design after for our books.
Really?
They've always done such a wonderful job. They've always been about, you know, presenting the whole package. You can tell for them, you know, back when the manga craze first started, some companies had heart, some companies maybe didn't have the heart, but Vertical has always had the heart. And so we've gone in and delved into a lot of different titles, but I kind of feel like if you walk away with your head kind of scrambled and you don't really know where to go, going to the Vertical website to find your manga for your adult collection, you will definitely do well. And all of them, their one big series that was huge 15 years ago is Buddha by Tezuka. I don't know if that's in the presentation, but that's like the number one seller in our store for our manga. It's just amazing. It's just one of the best books for adults.
I completely agree. They publish such a wide range of stuff as well that, like, their name for me is honestly like a sign of quality. I'm going to check it out just because they publish it.
Yeah, they just don't do any bad books. This is another Kiyoko Okazaki book. And also, Vertical does more Jose than anybody else. And again, Jose is for young women. So another book by the same author, Pink, is drawn in a little bit more conventional style. It is a totally batshit crazy book, however. Mm. And I've only read like the first third of it. So Chris, can you maybe...
It just gets crazier. the best thing about Helter Skelter and Pink is that...
Someone gets eaten by an alligator, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, she has a pet alligator. It's a metaphor, but also people die. These two books, Kyoko Okazaki is so groundbreaking, 80s cartoonist, groundbreaking, because she was the cartoonist, as a Jose cartoonist, who was like, I am tired of every story for women being about falling in love or making it on your own in the big city and then falling in love or whatever. It's like, what about, you know, people that just want to, like, have sex and go drinking on the weekend?
weekends and have a good time with their lives. What about people, like, it has two female protagonists, very different from each other, but the common goal or the common theme is they're just women who don't take any shit. And that is so hard to find across the board in graphic fiction for people in their 20s and 30s. That's what makes these such great books, is that these are like uncompromising, unapologetic female protagonists who, yeah, they absolutely do some terrible, terrible things, but they're such an internal logic to the work and to their actions that you can't help but root for them. She's an incredible creator, and I wish we could get more English from her.
Speaking of strong female characters, we have Ooku, The Inner Chambers, which is a historical fiction manga about a society in which the men, and again, because I've only read a little bit into it.
Like 90% of all men die.
Yeah.
And so men sort of become like become prized possessions of the female shogun. So the harems are all men, and like men might have physical labor jobs, but for the most part, they're too rare. So it's a complete inversion of Japanese society. So it both teaches you Japanese society and also is a criticism of contemporary Japanese social mores by flipping these traditional ideas of men, male and female gender roles, and then they get into some non-binary gender stuff later in the series. It's an amazing series to put on your shelf. Again, if you want that Japanese classical historical stuff for people that are coming in looking for samurai movies or sort of beautiful, you know, geisha movies, but that will upend people's expectations and really deliver them an experience they can't get in any other medium.
And then there's Sakuran. Sakuran is a geisha story. It is definitely a difficult read for people who the storytelling in this book is, I would say, very compressed. It's just one volume, but a lot happens. And even as an experienced manga reader, I sometimes found myself going back and going, wait, what just happened there? It is a brutal and beautiful story. Oh, and there was a movie of it, too. It's a story of brothel life in the 1800s, and the lead character she sort of rises to the top and becomes the head, the oiran, I think the word is, and then she makes the mistake of falling in love.
So she came to TCAP in 2014.
Yeah, Moyoko Ano, and we have. Does anybody want to say anything about Sakura before we go on to the other?
Well, I did. I actually attempted to interview her, and she's a really iconic author, you know, in Japan, who really is about creating new kinds of women characters. And it was very interesting to hear her talk about the ideas around creating this character and creating a willful woman in a time where that was really completely unheard of.
And her current series is being serialized online. It's called Confessions of an Amorous Gentleman. It's also about prostitution, but it's set in, I think, an 18th century French whorehouse, I guess, is how it was explained to me by her. And it's, again, I hope that one gets published in English as well, because it's in physical form. Because it's, again, like, women in a certain point in history only had this one kind of power, or was one of the primary kinds of power, and she's exploring these stories that aren't necessarily being told. And she's doing it in manga, which is kind of incredible, and what makes an important adult collection.
So the other Moyoko Ano title, very different, is A Close Called Fat. And again, this is a single volume. This is about body image. It is a very different take on it than you would, I think, see in any American comic. It's about a woman who is fat, but she's basically happy. She has her boyfriend, and you know, she has her job, but her coworkers bully her, and one of them in particular targets her. And she decides that the only way to change this is to lose weight. So she does. And it is, the characters are almost all unlikable. The story itself, the underlying attitudes that everyone has, I think are very unusual. It is, it deals with a little bit with bulimia and dieting, but really it's about what will losing weight change my life, you know, and what's the answer to that question, and how much does our attractiveness affect our lives and our self-worth as human beings. And it's honestly kind of bleak, but also a real page-turner.
Yeah, it was really good. It's also, what I got out of it was that it's about obsession as well.
Yeah.
In terms of how getting fixated on one goal can sometimes blind you to what you should be focusing on.
Exactly.
Sometimes really, really to your detriment.
And also, a really mean person can completely mess up your life if they really want to. I think that's the other lesson one would learn from that.
One thing we haven't brought up is, and I know it's one of the trepidations people have with building adult collections versus keeping their collections sort of teen safe, is that, you know, when work is challenged, maybe you don't know how to defend a work that's being challenged. It's one of the things I know the Big Island does for people, but one of the things that's really good about a lot of the stuff that we've selected today is that there are, this one in particular was an award winner at Angoulême for best translated work into Japanese, or into French, sorry. And a lot of the works we've picked today are ones that have numerous award wins or nominations that they've ended up on reading lists, things like that, that really give them sort of, you know, a legitimacy in the eyes of the larger public, but also give you the ammunition you need to address any challenges. So that's something that, you know, we can always help with too, and, you know, a little bit of research can help with as well.
I think Ghost in the Shell comes the closest to just being lured for lured's sake.
Yeah.
In the context around all these books, it's very, it's almost like incidental adult content.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, this is the Bourne chapter. Which is what happened in Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Here's the volume about breasts.
Yeah.
Oishibo is a foodie manga. The setup is basically that there's a, and it means that this manga's going on for like 100 volumes in Japan, right?
It's about
a reporter who travels around the country with an unlimited expense account trying to put together the perfect Japanese meal. And if you like Cooks Illustrated, okay, you'll like Oishibo because it starts off with somebody doing it wrong and then being told how to do it right. So, okay, all right, we've got to run through these real fast.
Seven volumes, the entirety of Japanese cuisine covered. It's fantastic.
Yeah, this book does really, really well in our store. Like, we have all volumes and everyone just kind of flocks to it. And each volume has a different theme, so you can kind of pick up the theme you're interested in and then you'll want to read the next one. It's a great series.
What did you eat yesterday? Sounds like a foodie manga, and it is, actually. But it is also kind of a drama.
We're super out of time. I know you guys want to go. So we'll give you like the one-sentence pitch on the last couple ones.
Okay.
What Did You Eat Yesterday is about two gay guys that are living together in Japan, and one of them cooks for the other one every night, and they talk about their day. It seems the most boring thing, but it's...
Oh, that seems great!
An illustration of individual Japanese recipes, and... navigating career things. It's really phenomenal. Love it a lot.
Yeah. Massive. This is the last one.
This is Born for Born's Sake. This one is really, really, really difficult. But the reason I put it in here is because this is actually the only, or was the first, collection of work by gay creators in Japan. This has blossomed and is hugely popular, especially online, in communities that aren't typically served by manga, or, you know, communities that aren't typically served by gay narratives. And the other thing that makes this good is there's at least 50 pages in this of creator interviews, background, information about how this manga came about, but the stories themselves are, well, they're a step beyond racy, is the way to put it. So if you have a non-circulating collection, or if you have, you know, a particular, like you're an institutional collection, I think this is good. In a public library, it can be tough, but I think it's in TPL, question mark? Might not be in TPL.
We made a good choice for a university library that was had, you know, a queer studies faculty or something.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's an important book, but not every important book can go into every collection.
All right. So do we have to, this is the last one. Everybody's
trying to kick us out of the room.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's fine. You know, it is what it is. if there's burning questions,
I'm okay for staying for another couple minutes, but if people want to go, that's fine.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah, we'll give you guys an edit. But, all right, well, then we'll say thank you. Thank you for coming, guys.
Yes, thank you.
So, I just have to say a couple of things. First of all, thank you so much to our panelists. And thank you so much to Toronto Public Library for providing the space for the whole festival, but also for today. We also want to thank, this is weird, because this is sort of me, but we want to thank the Beguiling Library Services for running this day.
Andrew, and you did such a good job. Thank you.
And I want to thank Grind Quarterly, as well as First Second Books, Kids Camp Press, No Breath, Penguin Random House Canada, Scholastic Canada, and Biz Media. Those are the publishing folks who helped put together the patron packs and a lot of the glorious swag that you saw, and their support is super important to this day. So thank you very much for coming.
And remember, you can see the deck on mangacomicsmanga.com.